The Rhode Island House of Representatives passed the most recent state budget in just about 3 hours last month. That rapid pace reflects strong support in the chamber for House Speaker Joe Shekarchy. But will Shekarchy's popularity translate into progress on Rhode Island's toughest issues, including improving public schools and creating a stronger economy? And what does Mr. Speaker have to say about the paralysis gripping attempts to redevelop the Cranston Street Armory and the signature-gathering controversy dogging Sabina Matos's congressional campaign? I'm Ian Donis, and this week I'm going in-depth with Rhode Island House Speaker Joe Shekarchy. Welcome back to the Publix Radio.
My pleasure to be back. It's one of my favorite media stops.
Let's start with the big story of the week, the controversy involving dubious signatures gathered by Sabina Matos's campaign in the 1st Congressional District. You've been around politics for a long time.
Not as long as you.
Well, actually longer. Are you surprised that Matos's campaign is getting buffeted by negative headlines due to an unforced error involving the collection of signatures?
I'm not surprised about the headlines. I'm surprised about the error because Lieutenant Governor has run for office many times, has been the city council president, and Lieutenant Governor. And these are mistakes that are very preventable. So it is surprising somewhat.
What does this show about Matos's campaign?
I think it's a reflection of her staff, and I think they weren't paying attention. And these are things you have to pay attention.
Let's switch gears to the Cranston Street Armory. The McKee administration announced this week that it no longer plans to work with Scout LTD, the Philadelphia company that had hoped to redevelop the Cranston Street Armory. There's talk about possibly transferring control of the armory to the city of Providence. Do you support Governor McKee's approach on this?
I don't know enough about I have not read the JLL report. I have seen only basically a slide stack of it. Based on that report, I think that there is some reason that this deal needs to be revised or reworked or possibly transferred to the city of Providence. I have very limited knowledge of the details of this, but I'm concerned about the fact that people seem to be focusing more about that terrible episode in Philadelphia, when my perspective from someone who sits as the Speaker of the House, I have to look at the entire state. And when you're talking about state dollars, you have to be very careful about it. Based on that limited review of the information I have, and I emphasize the word limited, it does not appear to be a good deal for the state. Now, I think the particular use for that neighborhood is a very good use. And I would recommend to the governor to see if he can work some kind of an arrangement with the city of Providence and possibly transfer ownership over to the city of Providence. And then it seems to be a very strong support, community-supported use. And I encourage the mayor and the governor to work together.
Providence has been a cash-strapped city for years. Is the idea of transferring it to Providence just a recipe for keeping the armory in limbo for many years to come?
I don't think so. I think that the Scout proposal, as I heard or as I understood, again, in a very limited way, that there was an opportunity for some federal tax credits. I know the city was also talking about putting some money in the state. There was going to be a collaboration of money. I think that the Scout needs to put some money in as well. If you're going to partner up with a private entity, I always like to have some skin in the game. So I think that there possibly is a deal there. I just think it needs to be reworked so that everybody's protected and everybody has an interest in it.
After officials with Scout described bad behavior by Rhode Island officials during a Philadelphia visit earlier this year, you said that wasn't a good look for Rhode Island. Do you think any specific steps are required to try and rehabilitate Rhode Island's out-of-town image?
I always think that Rhode Island should be, when we're competing or looking to do business with out-of-state entities, we should always put our best foot forward. Clearly, that was not the case. Both those individuals are no longer employed by the state. Thank goodness for that. And I think that as we move forward, we should learn, all of us as a state should learn from this, and that we're sending representatives out to represent the state, that they need to behave properly.
The State Ethics Commission recently voted to investigate a complaint filed against you by the state Republican Party. What do you say about this? Is there any validity to the argument made by the state GOP?
No. I trust the Ethics Commission to go through a process. I said a statement is politically motivated. And at the same time, they put that filed a complaint against me. They put out a press release saying, because we filed an ethics complaint, don't pass any of Speaker Shikachi's housing package. It was clearly motivated. It was an issue that did not pass the General Assembly. It was over 6 years ago. I said what I'm going to say. I'll have more to say at the conclusion of the Ethics Commission investigation. I'm going to let the professionals do their job.
The General Assembly this year approved and Governor McKee allowed to become law a presumptive benefit for firefighters suffering from hypertension and heart disease. The League of Cities and Towns, which lobbies for municipalities, says this is a misguided measure that will ramp up expensive costs for municipalities. How do you respond?
Well, I wish they were a little bit more vocal and specific in their opposition to the bill that was proposed. They seem to be focused, and a lot of more of the opposition was focused on the other firefighter bill, what had to do with PSD. But I will tell you that when we move a bill, and a bill of that magnitude, we listen to all the testimony, and there was clearly a lot of support. And you see the vote, both in the House and the Senate, was strong, overwhelming votes. So this was a presumption. It's a rebuttable presumption. I don't know if your listeners want to understand that quite a lot, but that has to do with a presumption regarding a legal proceeding that the burden is will now be shifted to the cities and towns to prove. This still requires three medical professionals to make some kind of a certification, and it just shifts a little bit of the burden in the process. It doesn't automatically guarantee anybody any right to any kind of a disability pension.
Governor McKee has described himself as a top advocate for cities and towns. Considering that, are you surprised that he did not veto that measure?
That was up to the governor to make that decision. No, I wasn't surprised. I know some people were surprised, but I will tell you that there was not that level of opposition for this particular bill until like after it passed than it was for the other firefighters bill, which the House did not pass, by the way.
You alluded earlier to the housing issue. You championed a series of bills this year, all of which passed except for one, to try and address the housing crisis in Rhode Island. Do you believe the state is bringing enough urgency to the housing crisis right now?
I certainly believe we're doing much more than we've ever done in the past. I'm extremely proud of the package that we passed. 13 of the 14 bills passed, and it was signed or became law. And I think that we have now, yes, to answer your question, we have a housing secretary. I will just reiterate, since I became speaker, I pledged to make housing a number one priority. I'm continuing to do so. We have elevated this. We have initiated programs and bills, the Pay for Success bill that specifically attacks homelessness in Rhode Island. We made an unprecedented amount of money, 25%, $250 million was used of ARPA money for that. We made millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of investments this year in creating a Department of Housing, staffing the Department of Housing, creating low-income tax credits for properties. We have empowered Secretary Pryor and filled his toolbox with a lot of tools that will make housing an attainable goal to relieve the crisis that we have. But I want to point out, this is a crisis that's been in the making for 30 years. It's not going to be solved overnight, and it's not going to be solved quickly. We need to increase housing supply and house as quickly as possible because there's a strong housing demand.
The one bill in your housing package that did not clear the legislature would have made it easier to create accessory dwelling units, also known as granny flats. There was opposition in the state Senate. Why is it so difficult to pass that kind of measure when everyone knows that Rhode Island needs more housing units?
I think that the people who are opposing it, or some of the advocates, or some of the local communities that are opposing it, haven't read the bill. This particular bill was worked. It's the number one priority nationwide and in Rhode Island by AARP, but it's also a high priority for a lot of the housing advocates. It's worked very successful in many parts of the country. They don't understand it. People fear what they don't know, or they hear a little bit on a radio talk show that isn't exactly 100% true, and they get afraid of what they don't know, and I think that's part of the process. We're going to continue the fight. I'm proud of what we passed. I'm proud of the ADU bill. I plan on passing that early, and continue to work with our partners in the Senate. And I want to congratulate the Senate for passing 13 out of 14. I'll take that any day of the week. It's a pretty good batting average. Even the Red Sox would like that.
The new state budget includes millions of dollars meant to foster a life sciences sector in Rhode Island. That's another issue that you've championed. What are the key steps to realize this vision moving forward?
We need to make sure we appoint the right person to lead this effort and the right chairman of the board and put together a really top-notch, high quality board. And the way the board is structured, we can have a lot of, and they can have meetings remotely. So we can have out of state people on the board. We have to attract young entrepreneurial people to Rhode Island who want to stay here, grow a business, and create high-paying private sector jobs. I like the way this has been structured. We're emulating Massachusetts. We're never going to be Harvard or Kendall Square, but we certainly can be just as good or better than Worcester and or Marshfield, which also have bioscience hubs. There was a company 10 years ago, you may have heard of it, called Moderna, and that was a startup tech. So we have the opportunity to a high quality of life here in Rhode Island, especially in the Providence area, that 195 area. I want to make a go of it. I want to at least try. I think Rhode Island should try for this, and I think we should look for something. We're not going to see benefits of this. I want to make it clear that I'm not going to be speaker forever, and the whether this is a success or a failure will be judged after I'm gone. But I think that we owe to meet the needs of today, but we have to look at what we can do for the next generation of Rhode Islanders. And that's why we did this, and that's why we did a lot of the Environmental Act on climate legislation as well.
Donald Trump faces unprecedented legal problems for a prospective presidential candidate, but even many Democrats are concerned about Joe Biden. He would be the oldest president in U.S. history. He seems a little bit shaky at times. Are you concerned that if Donald Trump is the Republican candidate, that he could outflank Joe Biden?
No.
Because?
Because I'd be more concerned, to be quite honest with Ron DeSantis, because I think there is a growing and a very strong anti-Trump movement in this country. And I think every day that seems to be another indictment coming or investigation coming, it hurts the Trump brand. Now, we're not seeing that in the polls because right now you're polling inside of the Republican Party. But when you poll and you open your polling screens up to the general public, there is a strong and growing negative rating for Donald Trump, and I'm not concerned about him becoming a president again.
With about a minute left, what can the state do to move forward development projects that seem on hold right now due to the high interest climate, such as the Superman rehab and the Pawtucket Soccer Stadium?
I think what we need to do is we have made a commitment. We need to make sure that we are ready to act when private partners in those particular projects are ready. We have made commitments. The state has to honor their commitments. We have to be, as just we were talking earlier about negotiating with out-of-state people, we have to honor our word and make sure we're ready, willing, and able to perform. I think the state has done that in both of those particular cases, and we have to wait for. Unfortunately, we're in a high interest rate environment that makes banks very nervous and makes entrepreneurs and builders and developers and people who want to take a shot at Rhode Island nervous. But this is not a unique Rhode Island situation. This is happening all over the country because of high interest rates.
Rhode Island House Speaker Joe Shikarchi, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Always enjoy coming on your show.
For years, lots of people bought newspapers mostly for the sports page. Having a solid sports reporting staff was a requirement for any Metro Daily. But times are changing. The Providence Journal gets a lot of its professional sports coverage from its parent, Gannett. And even the New York Times recently announced plans to eliminate its own sports department. Since the Times owns a sports-focused digital presence known as The Athletic. But there is one media entity with a local presence that keeps doing things the old-fashioned way, cultivating print and online readers with a robust sports section written by its own reporters. You can read more about that in my Friday TGIF column, posting around 4 this afternoon at thepublicsradio.org and also on my Twitter at Ian Don. That's our show for this week. Our producer is James Baumgartner. I'm Ian Donis, and I'll see you on the radio.